muito.
Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet. I'm here in the studio with Lauren Landis. Patty is out today. You can friend us on Facebook, download podcasts of the show at lambdaweekly.com. And is that better? Are you, what, you're looking
at me? I don't hear you at all.
Oh, well, maybe I'll just turn your microphone up. Is that better?
There you go.
Yeah, well, that wasn't, had nothing to do with the mic. It had everything to do with you just turned it down too low.
Okay.
Our guest today is Randy Potts. Now, if you think you had a hard time coming out, Randy is evangelist Oral Roberts' grandson. His uncle Ronnie, Oral's son, was gay and committed suicide, but Randy is out, and he's here in the studio to tell us that it really does get better, even when your mother tells you you're going to hell in front of 4,000 people. And that did happen, didn't it, Randy?
Yes.
Yeah. He's laughing and kind of embarrassed because... I bet your parents never told you you were going to hell, Lauren, in front of 4,000 people.
You know what? Believe it or not, despite all the stories I've told, I've never been told that at all.
Oh, okay.
So, if I can tell you it's going to get better, I mean, Randy can definitely tell you it does get better.
Well, but Lauren, you are going to hell. completely other reasons, but...
Completely other reasons.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, today is pledge drive, too. Four times a year, we run a pledge drive here at KNON, and we ask that you support Gay and Lesbian Radio for North Texas. KNON has supported Gay and Lesbian Radio since before there was such a thing. In fact, KNON invented it. We're the oldest, longest-running gay and lesbian radio show anywhere in the country. We've been on the air since 1983, since before Lauren was born. And, no, Lauren is shaking his head. Okay, so
I wish I were still that young.
Oh, okay. But before we were on the air. Or before you were on the air with us. Anyway,
yes.
We've been on the air since 1983. KNON has supported us for that long, and today is the day that we get to support KNON. We're a non-commercial station, and unlike some of those other stations, we really do need your pledges because that is how we operate the station. We don't have a whole lot of major corporations that are out there saying Lambda Weekly is supported by... illegal oil drilling that is causing big pollution. We just don't do that like the other station does, do we, Lauren?
No. We tell the truth.
Huh.
But we do have some really nice premiums if you call in with a pledge. For $45, you can get the KNON staple, which is the KNON T-shirt, and that comes in, it's a black T-shirt with the white KNON Voice of the People logo on it. You can get that anywhere from a small up to a quadruple extra large. For only $45. Of course, we also have the KNON glass with the, and I have one of these. It's really nice. And it's that's for a pledge of $50. And we have a new one. That's a KNON, that's a softball. Do I plan throwing the ball around, David?
Sure.
Sure. Okay. The KNON softball. It's a soft vinyl football. And 7 inches long, and you can get two of those for the price of $25.
Now, this being
it's football season.
Lambda Weekly,
mm-hmm.
There is a difference between a soft football and a softball.
A big difference.
Okay.
See, here it is.
Oh, okay.
I should put the camera on it, right?
Yes, you should.
Also, there's the Aztec Flair coffee mug with the KNON Voice of the People design on it in white, contoured in the middle with flare base and a rim, and they get that for a pledge of $50.
Oh, you know, they have some of these here in the studio.
Yeah,
and
they
I
do.
Haven't seen that. That's actually nice.
It's very nice.
I like that more than the old mugs that were the glass ones. That I have a whole set of those. But I
yeah,
like
this is very nice.
Anyway, give us a call. The number is Metro 972-647-1893. We have a goal this hour of $600, so call us and get us going. And Laurent will be answering the phone.
I will. So if you want to keep me off the air today, call.
Which I do.
972-647-1893.
And as I said, our guest today is Randy Potts. Randy, welcome.
Thanks.
Now, you are Oral Roberts' grandson.
Right.
It seems like an odd kind of thing to ask, but when did you really know that you were his grandson? When did you know what that even meant?
I think when I was a kid and I moved back to Oklahoma, and for the first time actually was on stage when he came out in front of a huge audience, and just sitting there as a kid with the spotlights all of a sudden coming on, and you know, my grandfather standing there in front of all those people, all of a sudden it made sense that he was bigger than the guy I'd known before.
He wasn't just grandpa.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Now, let's bring you up to current. You live here in Dallas. You've lived here how long?
4 years.
You have kids?
I have 3 kids.
And how did that happen?
Well, I was married when I was 20 years old. I married my best friend. And we were married for 11 years, actually together 13. And we had 3 amazing, great kids. And we both moved down here to Dallas for her career. And then... also split up, and we now share the kids, you know, 50-50.
Okay. Wonderful.
Yeah. Wonderful. Now, we always ask our guests who have kids for parenting advice for Laurent. So you can just think about it, because I'll give him advice like I'll read about some parent who left their kid in the car seat up on the roof and drove off.
And he tells me that's what I should do.
Yeah, I would recommend it. It's a good discipline technique.
Yeah. Oh, okay, I like that.
So think about it. We like to help Laurent with his parenting skills because his baby's going to be two in just a few weeks.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Okay, so now you're okay. It gets better.
Uh-huh.
A year ago at your grandfather's funeral, it didn't seem so okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, things have been getting better. Ever since I came out, every year steadily getting better. And it is true that when I went to his funeral, it was a shock and strange to be treated that way. But, you know, I got past that. And
okay, explain how you were treated.
Okay, well, I wasn't actually invited to the funeral. I had to get tickets for the graveside thing through a cousin. And
Ticketmaster.
Yeah, kind of. So I got to see, you know, the graveside and everything, but I wasn't invited to sit with the family at the memorial, and which actually that was fine with me. But I wasn't invited, and then, you know, there was that big moment during the memorial when my mother was talking. She looked over and she saw me with a very good friend who's straight, but she assumed he was my partner, and then she saw me sitting also next to Carlton Pearson, who is not much loved by the Roberts family either, and she
explain
went on.
Who he is?
Carlton Pearson was sort of at one time. Oral saw him as the successor. He called him his black son and said, "This is the man that, you know, has the healing power that's now in me," and all that kind of thing. And then Carlton one day kind of had an epiphany and said, "The God I serve does not send people to hell," and he lost his church of 5,000-plus people, and he supports, you know, gays and lesbians and all that kind of thing. So anyway, I was sitting next to him as well, and my mother saw that and completely stopped what she was talking about and went off on a rant about me and about him and reminding us that, you know, there is a hell and that God will send us there and all that kind of thing. So that was quite an experience.
So, again, this is at his funeral.
At
this
his
is
the funeral. Memorial
oh,
service, right.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was kind of intense.
So tell us a little bit about the Roberts family. There was Oral, and right. He had 4 kids.
4 kids, right.
Your mother was?
My mother was the baby.
Okay.
Richard is the one that's still, you know, has his own kind of ministry. And he's sort of the one, he became president of ORU after Oral. And that's my uncle. Mm-hmm. And so I'm the grandson of the youngest daughter.
Of the youngest daughter. There was Ronnie, who was...
Ronnie was the oldest. Okay. He was supposed to be the successor, but and he was definitely, you know, very bright and capable and witty, but he, you know, didn't really go toe the line, and so...
And then there was another sister?
Yeah, Rebecca, and there was a plane crash in the 70s, and that's how we lost her.
Okay, so but, two of them are no longer alive,
right.
And all that was left was your mother and...
And my Uncle Richard.
Right. And Richard. Okay, so your uncle and Richard were left, and... your mother is the one that's associated with Oral Roberts University now, isn't she?
Well, right. Richard was president for quite some time, and then about 2 years ago, maybe three, there was a scandal that broke out, and nobody really got to the bottom of it, but he resigned and left the university, and it now has his own independent ministry, and my mother is now on the board of trustees for ORU, which happened after Oral passed.
Okay, and so he left, and so your mother was the only one that was left within the family.
Right.
And so it made sense for one of the Roberts to still be there.
Sure.
And she, when did she first find out that you were gay?
Probably, I'm guessing maybe 5 or 6 years ago.
Okay.
Well, I mean, was it she found out, or did you actually come out?
She found out. Before I really even came out, but we've never had a straight-on discussion about it. We don't talk much anyway. So there wasn't like a big discussion where I said I'm gay. I really didn't have much to do with her as an adult anyway.
Okay.
So
even when you were married, had kids?
No.
She wasn't...
We saw each other once a year for Christmas for, you know, 15 minutes, but that was really it. So this hasn't changed a whole lot. Really.
So she was not the doting grandmother type?
No, definitely not. Yeah, we never really saw eye to eye ever since I was probably 12 or 13, and that probably won't change.
Let's go back then again. When you were 12 or 13, what was it like growing up in a family like that? What were some of the things that you were taught?
Well, what happened when I was 12 or 13, you know, a lot of kids begin to question the world around them, and I began to question lots of things, not in a harsh way, but just trying to say, you know, well, what about the miracles Jesus did? Did they really happen? And these kinds of questions, I started reading C.S. Lewis and thinking about all the stuff I'd been taught. And my mother specifically said, you cannot debate these, you cannot question these things, you have to guard your mind, close your mind, these are thoughts from the devil, and you can't, these are not open for discussion. And I said, oh, and went ahead thinking about them anyway, and she, you know, we stopped talking because we just couldn't come to an agreement even then.
So the religious belief there would be that it's a better belief if you just shut your mind and you just say, yep, that's what I was taught, and so that's the way it is, not if you come to those beliefs by debating all the different sides and learning all kinds of different things and understanding your particular belief.
Yeah, my mother was in law school at the time, and she specifically said how, you know, in law school you're taught that there isn't necessarily a right or wrong, that you're supposed to weigh both sides of the issue and come to, you know, your conclusion. And she said that that specifically was wrong, that there is good and evil, and that God, you know, gave us the Bible that identifies good and evil. And if you question that, you're going to hell, essentially.
So your mother's an attorney.
Yes.
Uh-huh. But attorneys debate all sides of things all the time. How did she practice as an attorney and yet turn her mind off to debating things?
Well, she only works in personal injury, which there's not a lot of, you know, it's fairly straightforward. And to her, you know, I don't know how to answer that completely, but she does it somehow. You know.
And you're saying there aren't two sides to personal injury, but... But there are.
There are, sure.
I mean, it's not a matter of whether or not the person was hurt, but it's how much LaRon was guilty for having deliberately driven his car into her.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure.
In personal injury, it's how much is the other person at fault? Was there anything that person can do? And that's very debatable.
Yeah, I would agree with you, but... At some level, she doesn't. I don't know quite, you know.
Well, I just want to ask you, you know, as a person who has grown up with a famous relative, did that, first of all, I don't know when you came to the realization that, in fact, you were gay, but a lot of people you know, they, as men, we know it, and yet we still, because that's what we're taught from society, we still got to marry a woman and have a family. And, you know, some of us do that anyway. Did that being related to someone, not only who's famous, but very conservative, did that drive you even further into the closet?
That's really hard to say. I don't know how much it had to do with that. Although there were a lot of family expectations and eyes on me for my behavior, so it could be. I knew I liked men since I was 4 or 5 years old. You know, all the boys would talk about Daisy Duke, and I would look at Bo and Luke, and that was just how I was. But I didn't know what gay was, but I knew, you know, Bo and Luke were really cute, and I couldn't decide between them, and all the boys looked at Daisy Duke, and that just was how I was. But I didn't realize that meant I was gay or anything like that. But that's, you know, I knew from that age even that I was.
Did you ever say that out loud?
No, but my mother once, when I was maybe 6 or 7, I said strawberry shortcake was so gay, you know, meaning she's stupid or whatever. And my mother gave me this big lecture about what gay men are and how they have sex and how God said it was an abomination and how God destroyed whole cities because they were gay. And she gave me this big, huge lecture. And that was very vivid in my mind that, you know, what gay men were from that point on and what God did to them. You know, that was, she made that very clear.
You know, I've always found it so interesting how a lot of people don't want to talk to their kids about the gay thing or this, any type of sexuality. But, you know, I knew when I was 5 or 6 years old also that I was gay. But you also know at that same time you don't say certain things. You don't say certain things out loud. So kids can process and internalize things much more than we give them credit for.
Right, yeah, true.
But, okay, so she had this really inappropriate discussion with you at the age of 6.
Might have been 7, I'm not sure.
Okay, so she had this really inappropriate discussion with you at the age of 7.
Right.
Okay. And, I mean, how does a kid...
I know.
How do you internalize that? What do you do with that?
I don't know. I don't think I really even tried to figure that out till my mid-20s. You know, I just ran away from that feeling. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of gay men had this. I had a lot of crushes in middle school when you're trying to sort of, you know, look around and everything and get attracted to people. And I had crushes on boys. And they, by the end of 7th grade, I just said, this is horrible. You know, I'm falling in love with these boys. They don't notice me. And so I just stopped really having friends with guys, and for probably at least 10 years. I mean, I had a few guy friends, but I didn't get very close to them because I was afraid of that kind of thing, and I just skirted the question completely, you know.
Now, in his ministry, did Oral Roberts talk much about homosexuality?
He didn't, and
he really,
you know,
didn't,
it,
no.
It bothers me a little bit in this to link his name with being so anti-gay in the sense that he didn't spend much time talking about that. However, the few times that he did discuss it, he was incredibly vehement and incredibly obnoxious about it, to the point where there are still recordings of him on YouTube talking about how much of an abomination it is. And so even though that wasn't the bulk of his ministry at all, and he tended to be like a good politician, very positive and upbeat, mm-hmm. that is part of his legacy, and that is part of what he's remembered for.
But he didn't use it as his big fundraising thing.
No, absolutely not. No, he really didn't.
That didn't become a fine art until Jerry Falwell came along, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And he really did not address the issue very much. He was not even a political person. His message was more about hope and healing and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So he was part of the anti-gay, you know, culture, but that was not his thrust in any way, shape, or form.
Okay. We need to take a break. It is Pledge Drive today. Our guest today is Randy Potts, who is Oral Roberts' grandson, and he's here to preach the message. That it gets better. But it is Pledge Drive. KNON has supported gay and lesbian radio, actually invented gay and lesbian radio back in 1983 when the station went on the air. And that microphone is just driving you nuts, isn't it, Laurent?
It is. It won't stay still.
So you can make a pledge, and maybe some of the money that we get will be to fix that arm that holds up that microphone.
Or we can help get the second microphone working.
Get it up to a higher level, right.
That's the kind of money things go to here. It's not for David's big salary. It's for the amenities they helped run the station, like the light bill.
Like the light bill, that's, what is it, $3,000 a month, something like that. We have very few salaries here at KNON. We have very low rent. We don't have a $1 million studio, but the things that we do have, we do need to pay for, and we need to pay our portion of it. So we ask you to give us a call and make a pledge. The number is Metro, 972-647-1893. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
Another way you could support your favorite show on KNON is by starting a KNON Bank Draft. KNON has an all-new bank draft system. Sign up now and support the voice of the people every month. It's easy and convenient, and a great solution for you if you're not always able to call during pledge drive. An automatic monthly draft will occur from your checking account. You can select the amount, $10 or more. Bank drafts provide a steady source of revenue for the station and can be started by calling 972-647-1893 right now. The total amount drafted each year is immediately credited to your favorite KNON program, and you'll receive your choice of gifts as soon as the draft begins. Pledge a dollar a day to keep your favorite station on the air every day. That's only $30 a month, and it goes a long way towards keeping KNON alive. It's time for you to be good to your ears. Make a pledge to KNON that keeps on giving.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet here in the studio with Laron Landis. Patty is off today. You can friend us on Facebook, download the podcast of the show at lambdaweekly.com. There are some new pictures on our website that you can look at and see Laron's ugly mug.
But you can also see my really cute baby.
Oh, yes, you can. and it is pledge drive. We're asking that you give us a call. We do have some pledge premiums. A KNON T-shirt available in sizes small to quadruple extra large is available for a $45 pledge. We have a lovely new black flared 10-ounce coffee mug in black with the KNON logo in white. For a $50 pledge, backpacks, aprons, all that stuff for $45 pledges or $50 pledges. Those $50 are $50 pledges. So give us a call, Metro, 972-647-1893.
And again, today our guest is Randy Potts, grandson of Oral Roberts. And one of the reasons why we wanted to bring him on is because of his, you know, wonderful, brilliant video that's part of this series of videos out there that is called It Gets Better. And again, before the show, I was telling Randy, you know, there's a gazillion of these videos out there, and that's a great thing. But you know, when you started watching them, you, at least me anyway, you just kind of started zipping through them, just watch the first few seconds and you click to the next. But there's something about Randy's that really catches your attention. You stop and you will pay attention. But I just wanted to talk to him. First of all, bravo, Randy. Great, great video. And how did you come up with the concept to, you have to, it forces you to pay attention because you're not talking in it at first.
Yeah, well, I wanted to make one when I started seeing these. I saw the Joel Burns one, and I kind of thought this would be, you know, I felt like I needed to make one of these. And then, but I didn't really know what to say, you know, except that it gets better. And then a good friend of mine said, well, why don't you just use something you've already written? And I realized I'd been writing this letter to my Uncle Ronnie, and it sort of was along the lines of, you know, telling him how things had been, how they'd been hard, but also how they'd gotten better. So that was kind of how I started thinking about, okay, I'm going to use this letter that I've already written and make a video out of that.
So your It Gets Better video, really, it's a letter to your Uncle Ronnie, who
right.
was Oral's oldest son.
Right.
He was gay.
Right.
And he committed suicide in 1983. Tell us a little bit about him.
Well, he, you know, was the oldest son of Oral, and when he was in high school, you know, Oral would mention, you know, this is my son Ronnie, he's going to take over someday. He was, he had a good stage presence, he was very bright, all that kind of thing, so it seemed very promising. But he was also gay, and he wrote in letters that were published after his death that he, in high school, knew he was gay and came out to close friends and family. But I'm not sure, you know, what he meant about that, because he also did, like me, marry his best friend and have a very long, very wonderful marriage with her. So, you know, it's that was the late 60s, I guess, when he was in high school, or maybe early 60s. So things were a little different when he said he came out. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't just tell everybody. He worked as a teacher and was not out, that kind of thing.
So he was married.
Right, right.
He had kids.
Mm-hmm.
Do you talk to his kids at all?
I used to be very close with them. Yeah.
And no more?
Yeah, I would just say that the pretty much almost my whole family is not happy with me speaking out about this. The idea that I'm linking a positive message about homosexuality with the Roberts name is just about the worst thing that I could do to most of my family.
Well, you just keep doing that, okay?
I will.
His ex-wife or
mm-hmm. Yeah, they
widow,
did divorce say, before.
Oh, they did get
they
divorced.
Did, yeah, they did
okay,
divorce.
And do you have any contact with her at all?
I did.
And what was that
and
like?
And she's a wonderful person. You know, what's interesting is that when I came out and I found out about my uncle, because this was a long, slow process of finding out about him, but when I came out and I found out about him, she embraced me heartily, and we actually went to see Brokeback Mountain together, and here I was sitting between his daughter and his ex-wife, my uncle's daughter and ex-wife, watching Brokeback, and the month I was coming out and getting divorced, so it was a crazy time for me, and we were so stunned after the movie that we didn't say a word leaving it because we all had so many emotions. Mm-hmm. So I could just say that our relationship now is complicated by the fact that I'm speaking out. But mm-hmm. She's a wonderful person and definitely really embraced me when I came out.
Well, what was the impetus for you to start speaking out? You could have easily just kept this to yourself and live your own private life, but what made you start speaking out about it?
Well, I think to me, when I came out, I started to find out about my uncle, and I started to realize that there were so many parallels between his life and mine. And there was a time in my life when I was suicidal, and I got really angry thinking I almost relived my uncle's whole life, even up to the point of suicide. And if I had only known his story, maybe this wouldn't have all happened. And so I started feeling like this story needs to be out there, not because of me, not because of him, but so that people don't relive this thing, so that they see this story as an example of you know, the pain that this stuff can cause, but also that you can escape from this kind of cycle. Because I almost followed his exact pattern, and that's really tragic.
Okay, so religiously,
mm-hmm.
you understand that it's not quite the kind of religion I grew up with.
Right, right, right.
So,
yeah.
So I still have some trouble understanding sometimes. Religiously, it was almost better to drive somebody to suicide than drive somebody to a life of being a good person, productive, but happens to be gay.
I think the way that a lot of people that I grew up with see homosexuality is they don't always see it as a sin that's worse than others, but they see openly gay people as someone who are openly embracing sin. So it's not just like one murder that they're asking forgiveness for. They're saying, I'm going to continue to murder every single day for the rest of my life. And so to a lot of these evangelicals, they're saying, well, you know, that's a horrible thing, and we have to reject those people because they are embracing their quote-unquote sin. That's kind of how they view it.
And how has this affected your relationship with God now, or, you know, your spirituality, or whatever you might believe now?
A lot. I mean, I think for a long time, when I was 18, I left home, and I really didn't look back and talk to my family much or anything, and I didn't go to church, and I really ran away from it. But sometime in my mid-20s, I realized that a part of me, you know, my culture is Christianity, and I'm never really going to get away from that. So I had to find a way to make peace with my past and my present, and that's taken some time. But I think there is a way to do it.
Any advice on how to find that for somebody who comes from a background like yours?
Well, I think, you know, there are Christian churches that are affirming for gays and lesbians, and there are plenty of those in every large community. If that's what the route someone wants to go, that's definitely there.
Yeah, I was telling David before the show, I spoke at a GSA this past week, and to my surprise, they wanted to talk about religion a lot, and I didn't want to talk about it.
Well, especially in a high school.
In a high school, yeah. I didn't really want to challenge, you know, what their parents' religious beliefs were, but I just told them, you know, If that's what you're looking for, there are accepting and with open arms denominations out there. You just have to kind of do your research, I suppose.
For somebody with a background like yours, do you find that even if you're eventually going to reject religion in your life or just not have it be a part, do you find that it's comforting or healing or somehow it helps you get your mind straight about what religion even is by actually attending one of those churches and talking to somebody there and seeing that, oh, okay, well, that's one branch and this is a different branch and a different way to believe?
I think so. I know for me, 3 or 4 years ago, I went to a church here in Dallas that was very gay affirming, and I really didn't want to go, and I wasn't into church or anything, but I went, and for me, it was to see openly gay men and openly gay women, you know, holding hands, putting their arms around each other in a loving way, and singing hymns just blew my mind. And it sort of, I just couldn't really take it in. And even though at the time that was not for me, and I didn't go back, just that experience of seeing, you know, loving couples that were gay singing the hymns that I knew from childhood was definitely a really good experience. Mm-hmm. It was very healing for me, anyway.
And I guess that's what I was really asking. Can something like that be healing, even if you decide that that's not your religious tradition and that's not what, and it's not really part of your belief system? It's still part of, very much a part of your past and who you are.
Yeah, no, I think it can be. Because, you know, it's kind of like if you have you grow up in a certain culture that you feel condemns you, but then all of a sudden you're put back in that culture, but they're not condemning you. It's a nice feeling, for sure.
It gets better feeling.
Definitely. Yeah. That there, you know, the idea that there are churches that, you know, don't say I'm going to hell. That's a great feeling, for sure.
Okay, why don't we do the entertainment report?
Alrighty, Ellen raised a few eyebrows amongst the other gays this week after she stated on her talk show that she thought the idea of having same-sex dance partners on the ABC hit show Dancing with the Stars was weird. Her exact quote was, I think it's weird. It's not a romantic thing. It's an art form, and it's dancing. It doesn't matter. We are just so used to seeing a man and a woman dancing together, end quote. She later clarified that she thought it would be great if it did happen, but couldn't say if Portia, her wife, would be a contestant.
Do you know why that even came up?
Yeah, because it's rumored that Portia's going to be on next season, and then...
But do you know where they did it? Dancing with the Stars is a franchise that's on.
Yeah, they do it. It's just like American Idol. They do it in different countries. Yeah.
Okay, the Israeli version of Dancing with the Stars this season has a same-sex couple. And that's what started everybody, because all of a sudden Dancing with the Stars in Israel has become the number one show with their same-sex couple.
Gotcha.
And so everybody is copying it now.
So I did think that was interesting that she said it would be weird.
I do, too.
I mean, she's right. It's not something that we're used to seeing, but I wouldn't think it's weird. I mean, replace the word dancing with marriage.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost...
And it's like saying, I understand why marriage is...
Exactly. Yeah. And I know she's pro same-sex marriage.
Right.
So, interesting, Ellen.
But I guess she's just saying, well, it's just a dance form, an art form, and it's
right.
Not, you know...
Right.
And so, yes, Portia could go dance with... A man, and there's nothing romantic about it. There's nothing sexual about
it.
Yeah.
Well, it became clear that Cher is still having a little trouble with her pronouns and correct GLBT terms when it comes to her new son, or her now son, Chaz Bono. The singer-actress referred to Chaz as a lesbian the other night on David Letterman's show. Her exact quote was, "She was a lesbian. She still is, but it's not the same now. She has a beautiful girlfriend, but it's not the same as being a homosexual. You feel as if you're in the wrong body." And, you know, a lot of people on the boards are kind of giving her grief about this. I'm like, you know what? Lighten up. This was her daughter for 40-something years. You know, it took Cher a while to even be okay with the idea that she's a lesbian.
Right.
You know, now she is a man. It's not going to happen overnight. Cut her some slack.
You know, remember Jackie when she was on? My friend Jackie, mm-hmm. who's transgender, and she's a transgender sportscaster. I asked her, you know, well, what does your mother call you? And she said, she calls me Jason. And I said, well, does that bother you? And she said, no, she always called me Jason.
Exactly.
You know, and it's like, she said she's very unpopular in the transgender community for saying this, but the acceptance that she gets from her mom is that her mother looks at her and sees the same person.
Exactly.
And she's seeing deeper than just what's on the outside, something deeper than what's skin deep. And same thing with Cher.
She didn't say anything hateful at all. She still, if anything, she gave her a compliment.
Right. I like her.
She gave him a compliment. I'm sorry. See, there we go.
There you go. But, you know, it's the same thing. I tend to call somebody by the way I first knew the person.
Exactly.
And I knew Jackie as she. I never met her as Jason.
Exactly.
But I met Chastity. Chaz was on the show
mm-hmm.
as Chastity.
Right.
Exactly. So that's how I knew Chastity. We spent that day at the State Fair together. I knew her as Chastity, and for me to, you know, it's not that I'm not accepting.
So when she comes back, when he comes back on mm-hmm. the show, we'll have to have some practice running you calling him Chaz, not Chastity.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, because it's the same person.
I mean, I thought about this when I read the story, and I thought, let's just take, you know, my mom is deceased, so I have to use my dad as an example. What if he were to have a gender reassignment? Mm-hmm. I would still call him Daddy.
Right.
It's not that I couldn't accept that he has changed his gender, but
it's the same person.
That's what I've been calling him for 30
something
years.
And when I say
it's
the same person, I'm not saying I'm not accepting.
Exactly.
I'm saying it's still the same person that you always loved.
Yeah, so cut her some slack, y'all. And last, it appears that the Florida Family Association claimed victory a bit too quick in their efforts to get advertisers to drop sponsorship of programs that they deem immoral. Now, what happened was they launched an email campaign against Kodak. Because Kodak sponsors the Teen Nick show called Degrassi High. And Degrassi High has a gay character on there, and it always has. But now they have a new teenage transgender character. And I guess that was just a bit too much for the Florida Family Association. So they started this email campaign to get them to drop the sponsorship. Well, last week, actually, I think for the past 2 weeks, Kodak has not aired their usual commercials. So they claim, yay, we won. We got them to drop the sponsorship. Well, not so fast. The Kodak representative issued a statement reassuring that Kodak has not dropped the sponsorship of the teen show and that the non-airing of commercials was a regular planned pause in their media schedule and that their new So Kodak advertising campaign will start re-airing next week. So they really jumped the gun.
Mm-hmm.
So unto you.
And that's our entertainment report. It is Pledge Drive this week. We need you to give us a call. We have a big goal for this week. We need you to give us a call. The number is Metro 972-647-1893 so that we can stay on the air. We've been on for 27 years, I guess.
Has it been that long?
Uh-huh. And oldest, longest-running gay and lesbian show in the country. And that doesn't guarantee we stay on. If we don't produce our pledge goals and pledge minimums, we're not going to be here much longer. So we need you to give us a call. It's Metro 972-647-1893. We do have pledge premiums for a $40 pledge, $45 pledge. We have KNON t-shirts for $45 and $50 pledges, mugs and aprons and glasses, and backpacks and a folding chair for $100, two of them for $150, that are great for outdoor concerts. If you'd like to do a bank draft, you can call us, tell us that you would like to start a bank draft, or you can make your pledge with a credit card, or we can send you a card and send us a check. Number Metro 972-647-1893.
And you know, with this show, we like to say that where else are you going to hear the news and the guests that we bring on the show anywhere else in North Texas? You're just not. You can read the headlines and you'll get a small story, but where else are you going to hear Randy Potts on the air? And in detail.
In Los Angeles this Friday.
Okay, that's L.A., but North Texas, you're not going to hear it. You're not going to hear it. So, and we have a lot of great guests like this, and we're that's what keeps us separated from a lot of the other GLBT media out there. So help keep us on the air. Help us bring in on great guests like this at by donating. Again, that number is 972-647-1893.
You're listening to KNON 89.3 FM. KNON is the open mic for the whole community. Do you want to keep that mic on for this show? What you're listening to right now will only be here in the future if you pick up the phone now and call 972-647-1893. Your money matters. Two-thirds of KNON's budget comes from you, the KNON listener. If you've done your part, we thank you. If you're waiting for the pledge drive to finish, you might wait out the existence of this show on KNON. Do your part while you can. Call now, 972-647-1893.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
It's time for
those darn heterosexuals.
Hold on. This one takes the cake. William Black was arrested in Sarasota, Florida, Walmart in September after he grabbed a Sports Illustrated swimsuit magazine issue off the magazine rack, retreated to another aisle, and left a mess on the floor. He told the police that he had been overcome by all the hot girls shopping at Walmart. Oh, my God.
Randy.
All right. I can't beat that one. New York gubernatorial candidate Carl Paladino grabbed headlines because of his homophobic rants, but this heterosexual should be remembered for his breakthrough in campaign literature technology. When you touched the pictures of his opponents, the paper gave off the stench of garbage.
And Drake University in Iowa was feeling under-respected academically, so they hired a marketing firm to roll out a new ad campaign. Introduced in September, the campaign was called the Drake Advantage, and the marketing firm cleverly highlighted the campaign's logo to achieve academic respectability. D-plus was the logo. And that's this week's
Those Darn Heterosexuals.
We are talking to Randy Potts. I want to remind everybody it is Pledge Drive this week. The number to give us a call, Metro 972-647-1893. And please give us a call because last week we did well. This week we're not doing well. We need to do well today because we have not met our goal. So give us a call, Metro 972-647-1893. Randy is the gay grandson of evangelist Oral Roberts. You don't have much of a relationship, especially with your immediate family.
Right.
You left home at 18. Were you thrown out of the house, or?
No. I went off to college, and you know, even then, though, I would only see my parents once or twice a year. I just was kind of done with my family, really, in a lot of ways.
But they got you through college.
I mostly they helped out a little bit. Yeah,
you did not go to Oral Roberts University.
No.
Was there any pressure on you to do that?
Well, there was, while I was in high school, my grandfather and my mother had a big fallout, and so when I actually went to college, they were not really speaking to one another, and so there was no pressure for me to go to RU at all.
Did you ever want to go to Oral Roberts University?
Okay. I didn't.
Didn't
no.
think so.
No.
And so you were away at college. You met your future wife.
Right.
And what was her family like? What was she, again, from the same family that you were? Same family?
She was from...
same family.
Her parents grew up Baptist, you know, as most people in Oklahoma do. But her parents were very... I'd say affirming of lots of different kinds of people or whatever, and even though they had, you know, religious roots, were not like my family at all in that respect when I met them.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if your kids are listening, but if they are, you know, I just want to tell you guys, you've got a strong daddy here. Seriously, you know, we talk about it gets better, but maybe we should talk about where do you get your strength. Growing up in a conservative family like that, to be called out in front of 4,000 plus people, That would have broke a lot of people.
At a funeral.
You know, nonetheless. That would have broke a lot of people.
It's part of my favorite part of that story. I love that.
I was flabbergasted. Like, are you serious? You know, where did you get that strength? I mean, you obviously had to have some. Did you have any support to get through all that?
Well, actually, a really good friend drove me to the funeral. I really didn't want to go, but I also kind of wanted to pay my last respects to my grandfather. You know, I knew my family wasn't too keen on seeing me. So, but a friend drove me up there, and then the night before the memorial, we had a sort of, you know, unofficial wake, and about 20 friends from high school and college met, and they kind of, you know, having that group being supportive of me was great. And so going to the memorial, even when my mother said that, I'd say for like 10, 15 seconds, I got kind of shaky and scared, and that typical little kid response. And then all of a sudden I realized, you know, I'm not her little kid anymore. She's making a fool of herself and sounding hateful, and I don't need to deal with this. And then that feeling just passed. And, you know, I kind of thought about the fact that I have great people who support me, and this is just some woman that's attacking. But, you know, kind of, I felt like she was making herself look worse, you know, than I was at that moment.
Well, she was. I mean, you were just there to pay your respects to your grandfather. Now, your grandfather, you had seen fairly recently.
I had. You know, I was never close to my grandfather at all. But the last year of his life, I went out with my children to L.A., and we just visited with him for like a short afternoon, a few hours. He was not in the best of health. But it was nice because he really made an attempt to be a grandfather to me for those few hours and a great grandfather to my kids. And that was a special moment because we, you know, we never were close. So my kids will remember him that way. And I get to remember that instead of all, you know, he was a scary grandfather when I was a kid.
So. In what way?
In every way. He was just kind of a terrifying human being to children.
Intimidating.
Very. And, you know, I always tell my friends the story of this time when he, you know, said he was going to shoot my dog, and he was just not a friendly grandfather.
What's wrong with the grandfather who's going to shoot your dog?
Yeah, you know, none of the grandkids felt close to him, you know, or sat in his lap. He wasn't that kind of grandfather.
Was he close to anybody? Your grandmother, maybe?
You know, he was very close to his wife, but other than that, he really did not have a lot of close personal friends.
Do you think, was he that way to his children too, Cold?
Yes.
So you think that's where your mother got her parenting skills from?
Yeah, I mean, at the funeral, both his surviving children talked extensively about how he was not a good father, but how they thought he was a good person. They liked his ministry, but they really did not like his being a parent. So even at his funeral, which surprised me that they really, you know, went out of their way to represent him as a terrible father.
Mm-hmm. Again, going back to the It Gets Better campaign, which, again, you did this great video for, what's been the response? And can you talk about what's been the response that you've received? I know this has been aimed at children or teens, but has it been more adults or a mix that you've heard from?
Yeah, it's been mostly adults, I'd say. Mostly, you know, men and women from ages, say, 30 to all the way to 60 or 70. And one thing that really struck me, you know, I wanted to make a video like this, and I made it mostly for, you know, my uncle, first of all, and then also to, you know, teenagers who were considering suicide. But the people that it really seemed to have spoken to were people who already kind of went through this, came from evangelical backgrounds, and related to what I was talking about and related to this experience of considering suicide. And one man in particular, really, his comment really struck me that the It Gets Better message coming from Oral Roberts' grandson, and also hearing that Oral Roberts' oldest son was gay, really kind of, for him, dismantled a lot of that fear and hate that he grew up with. That kind of took some of that away. And that I was really glad for, to see that some of that legacy was you know, taken apart by that video.
I mean, I guess what this shows is that, you know, even though, you know, you're in your 30s and 40s and so on, you learn to live and, you know, be as happy as you can be. But sometimes when you come from such conservative backgrounds, you really don't heal from that. You just learn to deal with it.
Right. No, I think that's really true.
But I think your visit to your grandfather, because there were more details there that you didn't get into just now.
Yeah.
Your visit to your grandfather was one of those very healing things, because for the first time you really saw him as a human.
Yeah, and as a grandfather. Yeah, it really was the first and only time.
Now, he had never met your kids before.
I think he'd met my youngest when she was maybe one, you know, but no, not like... He hadn't really met them.
And it wasn't like you were in communication with him and once a week would call him,
right,
hey,
no.
Grandpa, how are you?
Yeah.
It was not like that at all.
Not at all, no.
What did you call him when you met him? Did you call him?
The grandchildren all called them Andy and Munna. Andy was, one grandkid tried to say granddaddy and it became Andy. So he was Andy to me.
Oh, okay.
That was just...
so you did actually have a pet name for him. Okay, so, but you met him and he had learned your kids' names.
He had. He did his homework. He knew all three of my kids' names, which impressed me.
And gave them each a present.
Yeah, he had a book for them that he signed of, you know, his own, of course. But he had a book for them and then he, you know, gave them each a $20 bill and, you know, that was just, you know, meaningful for my kids and for him, I think.
And we're kind of laughing that he gave him a book of his own work. But actually, once they grow up,
Never forget that.
Yeah, that's a meaningful. Yeah.
It is a meaningful gift as a last gift, the last time they're going and only time they're going to see them. I mean, had he given your youngest one a stuffed animal?
Right. That's not.
It'd be gone.
Yeah, sure.
You know, it was amazing to me to hear this story again from someone who has relatives that's a public figure. We on the outside think, oh, they just lived a chummy, close life. They're close with all their sons and daughters and their grandkids. So it's just, if anything, it humanizes your family and the fact that, you know, they have their issues too, and that, you know, sometimes they're estranged from their loved ones also.
Sure.
So I'm shocked to hear that, you know, that was maybe one of the first times that he met his great grandchildren.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, when somebody, we think of it as, you know, okay, the parent. It says, you can't be that way, and I'm going to throw you out of the house. Well, they're losing their family, too. Mm-hmm. They're doing something to themselves.
They really are.
It's not just something that they're doing to you. I'm not sympathizing. I'm just saying they're losing their family, too. And that was kind of my question about this was, how is that in any way religious, not keeping your family together?
Yeah, I still don't understand it, but I think to their idea of thinking, you know, they're trying to keep themselves pure and clean and still go to heaven, and they feel like associating with a sinner won't allow them to do that, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so he had his parenting skills, passed those parenting skills down to your mother, who was probably even colder than her father was from your descriptions. And,
could be, I don't know.
And your father came from a very religious family also.
His father was a minister as well.
So. And so, and he was no closer to you at all, or are you more in touch with him?
No.
So where did you get your parenting skills? Because I know you're very close with your kids.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough when my children were very, very small. I started teaching at a middle school that was a small private school in Oklahoma City and very progressive and kind of Montessori based. And I learned...
Wait, they mean they have progressive schools in Oklahoma?
Yeah, I mean, it's an amazing school that was really treated kids like adults. And I learned my parenting by working there and watching how... the teachers and the administration there treated kids like adults who had thoughts and feelings that were valuable and, you know, didn't allow bullying to happen. And I just learned from that example. And that's because I knew my own example I saw growing up was just not how I was going to raise my kids. So it was nice to, you know, be in that environment that was affirming for all kids while I was raising my kids.
Was it at first just a complete shock to you?
Yes. My first year teaching, I had this discussion with the principal. And she said, so do you believe that when you say something and tell the kids what to do, that they should just do it without question? And I said, yes. And she said, well, we don't. And that kind of sunk in, and I started to see that, you know, there are alternatives to just sternly, you know, hitting someone with a stick and saying, do it. You know, there are other ways to raise kids and be a parent. But it took me, it was an adjustment for me because of the background I came from.
And why did they work with you on that? There are other people who had other types of experiences.
You mean why did the school?
The school, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, they, I guess they thought I was nice and friendly with kids and that I would come around. And I did. I mean, I really, there wasn't as much of a pressure as there was just this environment that was affirming toward kids that I wanted to, you know, be a part of.
I'm wondering if being in Oklahoma, if them knowing your background, they thought, huh, a Roberts here at our Montessori school, yeah, this is going to be interesting.
I don't know. Yeah, good question. Yeah, and very, as a very independent, free-thinking school, too, so I don't know.
Well, you know, before you, again, sort of came out publicly and letting people know, was there even, not even necessarily with the gay thing, but just was there always kind of a reaction when people found out that you were Oral Roberts' grandson?
Yeah, I hated it when I was even a young adult. I absolutely hated people finding out about my grandfather. And I tried to look as liberal and, you know, this and that as possible. So that when they did find out, they'd say, oh, well, okay, he's Oral's grandson, but he's cool. He's not crazy. And I made that a big point. It was, you know, my middle name is Roberts, but I didn't let anybody know that. And it was just I really hid from that past. I ran away from it and didn't want anything to do with that at all.
Well, we are just about out of time. I want to thank you for being
here. Thank you so much, Randy.
It is Pledge Drive, and we do need to do a little bit more begging on the air. We need you to give us a call. The number is Metro 972-647-1893.
We are coming up at the end of the hour, but we will still be here, so give us a call. Again, you can make a pledge in several different ways. You can make it by credit card. You can do a monthly charge to your credit card. And, you know, just do a little at a time because, you know, that adds up over time. So you don't have to call in with a big pledge of $45 or $50 if you don't have it. We will appreciate anything. Again, that number is 972-647-1893. I'm waiting by the phones.
And for a T-shirt, $45. For an apron, we have the aprons that are $45, ball caps that are $45, the glasses, the mugs, those are $50.
What else? Again, you can get that football.
And the soft final footballs are two for a $25 pledge, or blue and silver KNON pens, four of them for a $25 pledge. And those look like this, Laurent. I'm putting it in front of the microphone so people can see them. But yes, that's what they look like, Jennifer. So give us a call. We'll be around during Jennifer's show.
We are.
So all of the pledges that come in for Jennifer's show will credit to our show. But no, Jennifer's hitting me.
And if you do send in a check, please write on for it is for Linda Weekly, so we can get credit for that.
You know, and our portion that we have to raise is really a very small portion of the amount that Pledge Drive has to raise, but we do need to raise it because we have to pay the light bill, the electric bill, the tower rent. Otherwise, the station doesn't go out over the air.
We've got to keep the mics working.
Got to keep the mics working, and today they are.
And at least two of them are.
Two of them are. And that's always a good thing. So give us a call, Metro, 972-647-1893. We're going out with music from
Will Young.
I'm here, just like I said. Though it's breaking every rule I've ever made, my racing heart is just the same. Why make it strong to break it once again? And I'd love to say I do give everything to you, but I can never now be true. So I say, before I fall any deeper, I think I better leave right now. Feeling weaker and weaker, somebody better show me how. Before I fall any deeper, I think I better leave right now. I'm here, so please explain why you're opening up a healing wound again. I'm a little more careful, perhaps it shows. But if I lose the high,